the main question is for you to ask, what do I need in order for this to succeed? So to don't be afraid of being vulnerable in addressing what do I need. I think if you have a great idea and you come up to, you know, a guy you want to impress, et cetera, et cetera, the worst thing you can do, in my mind, is to appear absolutely on top of everything. So don't mind being a little, you know, underestimated, so to speak. Believe in yourself first and foremost, but make sure that you give the impression that this is not there yet. Even though you have a fantastic idea, you are not there yet. Coming back to my quote from before, that, you know, the world is too complex to network in order for any company to have all the answers inside.
Yeah.
No matter if you're a one-man startup or you're an international conglomerate, you don't have all the answers inside.
Welcome to season 4 of Go Out and Talk to Strangers. This is Adi. I'm a nomadic architect and the founder of The New Movement, an architectural design studio that designs one-of-a-kind, innovative, and creative projects worldwide, using the built environment as a tool to help people thrive. During my travels, I am constantly meeting incredible people, people who are reshaping the way we live, work, and connect. The reason I started this show is because I want to highlight the ones who are leading the way. This is the place where I host thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and founders of unique projects to share their stories and insights. I want to invite you to be part of the change. If you're looking for something bigger than yourself, if you also feel that we can do better, and standard is simply not good enough, you're in the right place. I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. On today's episode, I'm excited to welcome to the show Torben Klitgaard. He's the CEO of Blocks Hub, a business matchmaking community, a co-working space, and a research network hub for everyone who works within sustainable urbanization. I had the pleasure to meet Torben a year ago in Berlin, and now in Copenhagen, in person, we recorded this episode. Blocks Hub bridges architecture, engineering, design, construction, and digitization to develop and scale sustainable urbanization initiatives. Torben is a driving force behind the Blocks Hub activities, facilitation, and programs, which are designed to unlock and develop the full potential of Blocks Hub members' growth through partnerships on both national and international scale. As an experienced executive, Torben has a substantial track record of working in the fields of government, management, consulting, architecture, entrepreneurship, and tech. Blocks Hub has a unique way of operating, and I think we all can learn a lot from it. So let's begin. Hi, Torben. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Adi.
It's so wonderful to be able to be here with you in Copenhagen. At Blocks Hub.
You're welcome. Any point in time, you know that.
I love that. So let's talk about what is this place that we're sitting in.
First and foremost, thanks for coming and listening and seeing and feeling this place, because, you know, open source innovation in general is maybe a very sort of conceptual word, but what we try to do it is to do it here physically in our location in Copenhagen, in downtown Copenhagen. We call ourselves Blocks Hub, which means that we're a Nordic hub for urban innovation, meaning that we reach out to both Danish and international companies and public organizations, researchers, startups, corporates, a wide variety of stakeholders working within sort of the overall mission of creating more sustainable cities. So we are very mission-based, very purpose-based, purpose-driven, so to speak, in the sense that we get up every morning, go to work, meet new people in order to develop new ways of creating better and more sustainable cities. So we talk about how can we create more desirable urban futures, basically. And when I say we, I mean that we have some 135 companies here in Blocks Hub, which is a co-working space in Copenhagen. Actually, we have more companies because we're a community of some 350 companies all working together in order to achieve this mission. And we are working close together with as many companies within this community as possible in order for them to meet, in order for them to co-create new solutions, focusing on how we can create better futures. And we do that on an everyday basis. And I would say we, pointing to myself here and my team of colleagues, we have the role of sort of matchmaking these companies. So we're not sort of scientists, we're not consultants in that way. We are sort of conveners and brokers of knowledge, so to speak, across the companies in order for them to work and collaborate. Mm. So it's highly sort of purposeful what we do here, and we like to reach out to members and companies and stakeholders within the community and outside the community for that matter that are purpose driven in general.
That's so beautiful. You know, when you Google BlocksHub, the first thing that comes up, it's a co-working space, but it's so much more. It's an ecosystem.
You're right.
I wonder, how did it all start, and was this the original intention? Because you do so many things under this hub. There's a research center, right? Mm-hmm. Events, co-working, and then this matchmaking thing, and then also taking active steps into, well, we'll get there, like more sustainable cities and what you do around this area of action. So let's go back to the beginning.
So the origin.
The origin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and the origin was probably, way back in sort of 2005-06, some great people in Denmark decided to boost sort of the storytelling of Danish and Nordic architecture and to simply to create a new architecture center. Mm. So, and fast forwarding some 10 years, then we opened Blocks, the building Blocks, which is the same building that you and I are in now. Which is now the home for the Danish Architecture Center and the Danish Design Center. And on top of that, so to speak, we've created this co-working space, the hub where you and I are.
Literally
on top of it, yeah. So it's a great building, and it's a building for, you know, architecture, showcasing design, but also for companies to work together. So when I'm talking about co-working, that's sort of my playing field, so to speak, in relation to what's going on here in Blocks in Copenhagen. And as you said, let's go back, and I think let's go back to the original sort of challenge of, you know, realizing that the basic challenges the cities are facing requires much more interdisciplinary work than it used to. Mm. So we have to create the right circumstances and the right framing and the right platforms for that interdisciplinary collaboration to take place. And we decided that, you know, a physical platform as a location, a site, a place, a co-working site, as BlocksHub is the right way to do that. So we're not only, as you said, a co-working place, but we're also sort of a convener. I tend to call ourselves conveners because we are reaching out to the companies in order for them to get together on solving challenges that they can see themselves as part of. I would say in general, when we are trying to work with companies across, you know, across companies and across countries also, and across public and private sector, we are in general looking at solving challenges within the cities that are too troublesome and too complex for any single company to solve them by themselves. That's the reason, hence the reason why I'm saying we're not a consultancy, we're not an agency, we're not a studio. We're the ones that sort of, you know, the things in between the holes in the cheese, as someone said at the point.
The mycelium of the forest.
Exactly.
Of problem solving.
You're right.
You may say.
And of course I'm very eager in doing this and pushing that role, because I thoroughly believe that, you know, if you want to combat all the challenges we see, you know, climate change, biodiversity, social injustice, et cetera, all coming together in the city. The city is sort of the platform where all these challenges are meeting each other. Mm. We cannot rely on single companies to do it by themselves. We need someone, sort of the third factor, so to speak, in order for that to be facilitated towards the end goals of actually coming up with new solutions and services and products, et cetera, et cetera.
That's such a fresh approach to pretty much anything. Because usually companies want to be the only. We also have an episode this season about what it means to be the only. But the understanding that some problems need collaboration and a collaborative atmosphere in order to be solved, that's quite advanced in that sense. And on your website, they have like 8 main agendas that you're dealing with. Some of them are circular economy, design DNA, buildings, mobility, resilience, and much, much more. And those are topics that I think any company want to cover, but not sure that they have the resources or enough knowledge to do so.
You're right.
And how does it work, the matchmaking? Let's say, so there is a new member who's coming to the city with a company, or you're reaching out to a company.
Yeah.
I don't know how it usually works. And they say, we want to do something more. We want to do something at scale. What is the process that you do here to get to know who they are and what they can do and who to matchmake them with?
Yeah. Thanks for that great question, because, you know, it's it might, you know, sometimes when you talk about cross-sector collaboration and your co-creation across companies, etc., it might be a little blurred and a little fluffy. What do you actually mean? Because people are used to working inside their organization in order for them to innovate and develop new stuff. But we sort of, I think basically we are grounded or rooted in a mindset that says that, to quote a great American professor, that, you know, the world is simply too fast and too networked and too complex in order for any company to have all the answers inside. So even international conglomerates, corporates, still have to reach out to other companies, to startups, to different professions in order to come up with the right solutions, because the problems we are facing today are simply too complex. And the more complexity you add onto the problem, the more diverse the solution has to be, and the more diverse the teams that are coming towards or solving the challenges has to be. And that's what we try to do. But to answer your question, very straightforward. For us, it's a quite simple process in reality. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, any attempt to collaborate across companies are simple. Far from it.
Yeah.
But what we do is we are in close contact with, say, a company from within our network that is identifying a challenge of maybe coming up with a new solution on how to create, you know, inner city mobility, or how you can maybe, let's take an example of how can you cross three individual challenges, one being inner city mobility, second being, you know, placemaking in the city, and the third being in inner city air quality, for example. How can you make a crossover and actually look at solutions that actually cater to solve and tries to solve all three things in one go, through design, through architecture, through tech, etc., etc. And that being a challenge, then we reach out to, you know, the relevant companies within the community saying, hey, are you interested in trying to, in a collaborative manner, to work out new solutions or ideate new solutions, conceptual design phase primarily, I have to add. At least every second company we approach say, yes, that's a great idea. Of course, I have my own business.
Yeah.
Of course, I have my own stuff to do, and I'm very, very busy. But this sounds as a great idea. So, yeah, I would like to join that. And then we, you know, put them in a room, very, very diverse set of people. So we identify the challenge, number one. We set the team amongst the people or the companies or the researchers, startups, corporates, etc., being part of our community. And then we sort of convene and facilitate a process to a point where, you know, people within the group, the companies and the researchers saying, okay, now we can actually identify new ways of solving this. We might not have solved the problem. We might not have produced the product. We might not have, you know, come up with the exact detailed programming of how to do that, but we definitely have an idea. So going back to my point about the conceptual phase, we work in the very, very early phases of product development and innovation in order for the companies to meet, first and foremost, to frame a new challenge together. Secondly, to come up with a common language of how to solve this. Thirdly, to identify new ideas collaboratively. And then from there, you know, go in different directions. So at the point at the point of time in this process where we are, you know, ending the ideation phase, our people are leaving. So we are there in the very, very early stages in order for them to identify a common challenge, to identify, you know, the need to collaborate, and thirdly, to identify, hopefully, a set of solutions to solve the challenge. My people, my team in BlockSub, we are convening that process, and we are leaving sort of the collaboration at that point in time, and then the companies are free on their own to collaborate with themselves without the need of us. So that's sort of the basic model. We are identify the challenge, we recruit the team, and hopefully we come up with a set of solutions for them to go on to develop the solutions in a more detailed way, and to scale and to market and to promote and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that sounds great. And I will ask you for soon, so you can start thinking about it, if there's a case study that you can share. But what I want to ask first is, do you follow up? Are there any milestones or like later in the future of that collaboration that may have become a new company or a product? Do you stay involved, like to revisit the solution, or you just let it go from there?
I would say primarily we let it go. We following up sort of is a two-way street, so to speak. We are tracking some of the collaborations in the future. Unfortunately, we haven't got the resources to track every collaboration, because we're talking about maybe one innovation group each week, so it's quite a volume for us, and given the fact that we have limited resources, blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Of course, we haven't got the capacity to track them all. Secondly, of course, we know the majority of the companies involved in the process. Therefore, of course, we see them on not necessarily on an everyday basis, but we see them often. And of course, they come to us saying, hey, okay, great stuff we did together last week or last year. Now we've come to sort of, you know, a flipping point or a tipping point, so to speak, in the scaling of this product or challenges with authorities, governance, finance, new partners, et cetera, et cetera. And then, as such, we track them. But I would love to have a more sort of, to be a little dull here, I would love to have a more sort of structured way of tracking the companies after we leave them. We have a general model which we call encouraging, engaging, and enlarging, sort of the three E's. Mm-hmm. We encourage the companies to get on board this collaboration in order to solve the challenge. We engage them in this collaboration, and then we try to enlarge sort of the results to the wider ecosystem. Those of the companies involved in the process that will work together, meeting up in this process, we let them work together and we leave that relation. But the result of the initial collaboration, we have an obligation to disseminate to the rest of the community. That's what I call enlarge. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a shout out to the ecosystem of, hey, look at what we did, look at what they did, and try to learn from their experiences, etc.
Yeah, so is there a case study that you can share with us? Because we need to visualize things in depth in order to understand them fully.
Yeah, of course. We are just as we speak, more or less, we are helping out the city of Copenhagen in reaching their targets for our net zero cities in 2030. So the people of the city of Copenhagen are working, you know, very, very professionally, structurally on that. But they've come to a point in that process where they say, hey, there are some challenges within this. How do we include the people of the citizens of Copenhagen? How does that inflict on open space, on biodiversity, on inner mobility, etc., on energy consumption, etc.? Of course, these are great, great agendas. But in order to double click on these agendas, they need our help in order for them to meet other companies and other professions that can help them solve some of the more detailed problems within that process. So achieving a net zero city in 2030 is of course a big leap.
Yeah.
But the team in the city of Copenhagen that are actually working on this, we are trying to help out in actually come up with some innovative solutions to parts of that problem. So that's one example. Of course, biodiversity in cities are on everybody's lips. How can we create new strategies for pushing the biodiversity agenda and urban greening agenda in cities? That's another agenda, and that's another topic we're working with as we speak. New models, new financing models for social housing, just to give you a completely different challenge as an example, is also something that we're working with alongside with a great organization called the Institute for Human Rights and Business, a London-based organization, mm-hmm. which have their Nordic hub here in Blocksup, reaching out, you know, to a variety of different companies in order for them to help along the IHRB organization to come up with new solutions on new ways of financing social housing. And if I must just briefly double click on that, I think that
Please
the notion
do.
Of, you know, we're all talking about climate change these days and biodiversity, and we know all these challenges are coming together. One thing that I think is explicitly important that will boost and outboost most of the other challenges is the social issue. I think, you know, spatial justice, social justice, just transition, all these topics are there for a reason. I think if you look at the climate change, if we are not taking into account a social balanced transition in combating the climate change, for that matter also the biodiversity challenge, we are close to being doomed, to be honest. I think that's a major, major challenge all throughout the globe, but also in the major cities of Europe. We see that already, you know, social tensions working out. We've seen that in France this summer. We see that in lots of places. And I think, you know, if we are not really, really contemplating a just transition when we talk about how to combat the climate change, we are in for some serious problems. So the social aspect of this major transformation our societies are facing is, for me, you know, definitely on top of the list.
That's, yeah, I couldn't agree more. We tend to focus on one piece of the puzzle that is now finally, unfortunately, become more and more visible, but it's just part of a bigger equation. And obviously social and the degrowth movement and so many things. I don't know if you're familiar with Nate Hagen's podcast, The Great Simplification.
No, not as such.
Okay,
no.
It is incredible. I will also put the link in the show notes for everyone to listen. He framed, I think he was the first person I heard that framed this problem, that managed to describe the problem with its complexity and not only looking at only climate change or only our need to keep business as usual and what success is like and what do we strive for in life and how connected we used to feel and how lonely we are now. And super interesting things. So I want to ask you, as a person who is working around innovation and desired futures, what do you think the future of cities will be from your views? Yeah, that's a very broad topic, I'm aware.
No, it's a fantastic topic. That's the reason why we're here. So thanks for the question, Addy.
You're happy to.
And of course, my question is just one in a million of answers, of course. But I think in general, as a community, as an ecosystem, so to speak, Blocksup is focusing. You kindly mentioned the topics we've got on our website. Actually, we've tried to group them a little bit now in the second edition of what we do and what we are focusing at. Being, you know, having a mission of creating a more desirable urban future overall, what we like to do is to group all the things that we do here in three different ways, looking at cities as three different angles, of course coming together as circles overlapping, but that has led us to sort of a narrative or a thinking where we talk about cities are systems, the need for, you know, thinking holistically when we talk about city planning, the transitions and transformation in cities. Point number one. Point number two, we look at cities, we say that cities are nature, double clicking on the fact that we need more nature-based solutions within the cities, not necessarily because we believe that we can balance and level the biodiversity crisis by simply putting more green areas within the city, because you cannot balance that. Yeah. Just to give you a small example, in Denmark, there's an international target of having 30% of our nature as wild nature. And in Denmark, as we speak, we're down to 2.6% of all nature in Denmark being wild. So there's a tremendous long journey from going to 2.6% of wild nature
in our urban area, in our rural areas, in our forests, etc., and then going up to the target being 30%. Of course, you cannot, by greening up the city, you cannot reach that target, but you can make sure and make available agendas, and you can make sort of the necessity of talking about diversity more closer to people. I do believe that, you know, the closer to you get to you cannot fight for what you cannot touch, what you cannot feel, what you cannot look at. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we need more biodiversity in the cities in order for people to take care of the nature in general. That's the point. And thirdly, we are focusing on cities, and we are saying that cities are communities. Mm-hmm. So cities are systems, nature, and communities. So those are sort of our overall three focal areas, meaning that if we want to develop sustainable futures in cities, we simply need to have, from the planning point of view, a systemic, holistic view. That's a prerequisite for changing anything in the cities. We need to do that in a sustainable way, we need to do that in a green way, and we need to do that based on the value of the communities that are living inside the cities. I think actually Copenhagen is a great example of that, because we're very, very sort of, we're close to the citizens of Copenhagen. We have sort of processes for the citizens to be part of, you know, rural transformations and, urban transformations, spatial transformations, et cetera, et cetera. Reaching out to the individual citizens, not only in ways of the general elections and local elections here, but also on a daily basis, reaching out to the citizen in order to get into a close dialogue with the citizens of what to do and what not to do. Mm-hmm. So the value of communities, the value of listening, the value of being close to your citizens is extremely important. And I think if you don't have that mindset, you cannot create desirable futures in cities that people thrive for. Young people, you know, come there and live there and work there, have their everyday life in the city. People are moving away from the cities if you don't thrive for that, I think. So that's sort of my very short, long answer to your question.
Leads me to the next question that I want to ask you. So many of the listeners of this podcast are founders of unique projects across the world, or people who are seeking to bring something new or dreaming about bringing something new. And I think many of them can relate to the things that you say, but maybe they don't have enough tools or modeling, which is one of the reasons that I'm doing this podcast, to share knowledge and to show more examples of how it can be done differently. Mm. So if you were to advise someone who's about to start a project, and I'll rephrase the question a bit, what are the questions that they must ask when starting a new project in an ecosystem or in a city or in a rural area that you think are most relevant to the three main topics you just mentioned?
Well, that's a good question. You're posing quite good questions.
Oh, thank you. Because we are coming to this point that we've been answering the wrong questions. Yeah. We answered the wrong questions in the last, 20, 30, 50 years. Mm. And now we understand that we need to come up with new questions. Mm. And I think you may have some good ones.
Ooh, yeah. Well, of course, the general part is, you know, it's not in the answers that the answers lie. It's in the questions, of course. But that's sort of a more sort of a theoretical take on that. Mm-hmm. I think in general, what we do is when startups are approaching us, we have several startups in BlocksUp, and of course, they have their individual basis. And I think in general, when they approach us, of course, we listen to their basic business idea. And I think the main question is to the main prerequisite, no matter whether you're a designer or you're a tech nerd or you're sort of a philanthropist, you might be a philanthropist, but also an anthropologist or whatever profession you sort of come from. I think the main question is for you to ask, what do I need in order for this to succeed? So don't be afraid of being vulnerable in addressing what do I need. I think if you have a great idea and you come up to, you know, a guy you want to impress, et cetera, et cetera, the worst thing you can do in my mind is to appear absolutely on top of everything. Hmm. So don't mind being a little, you know, underestimated, so to speak. Believe in yourself first and foremost, but make sure that you give the impression that this is not there yet. Even though you have a fantastic idea, you are not there yet. Mm. Coming back to my quote from before, that you know the world is too complex to network in order for any company to have all the answers inside.
Yeah.
No matter if you're a one-man startup or you're an international conglomerate, you don't have all the answers inside. And be honest to yourself and humble in order for you to open up that the fact that you know you don't have all the answers so far. Mm. So what do I need? That starts off a discussion of, okay, great idea, Addy, but if I am to advise you, in order for your ideas to thrive and scale, you need this or that in your team in order to move on. And be honest about that. And don't think that you have all the answers inside, even if you're a startup. You might have a great idea, but you do not have all the answers inside. If you have that mindset from the word go, people will approach you, people will help you, people will finance you, people will work with you, etc., etc. I think that's the basic mindset required by any great idea, any great startup, and any great sort of way to move forward.
I love that. Thank you. That's a great advice. So to keep a beginner's mindset in a way and know that there's always room to not know all the answers. So Tervin, tell me about some of the projects and the things that you're passionate about nowadays.
Lots of things, of course, comes to my mind. In BlocksHub, we're quite committed to thinking in new ways, I would say, in order to create a more sustainable future in cities. I think fundamentally we come from sort of a culture that thinks about, you know, that cities are basically for people. So a city without people is not a city. A city only being thought of as a collection of buildings, physical objects, has nothing to do with the city. So the city is very much designed for people, by people, and with people. That is very sort of ingrained in our thinking when we talk about how to build sustainable cities, cities for life, cities for people. So of course that sort of being sort of the basic foundation of the thinking that is deployed in the people that are part of BlocksHub and the community that BlocksHub is. And what we do explicitly, of course, is we try to bring people together to share their ideas based on that basic mindset in order to come up with new ideas, new ventures, new solutions to how we can keep on pushing that agenda of creating more sustainability. And of course, if you add the climate change and the biodiversity change and social inequalities, of course, that presents tremendous problems to cities, because we know for a fact that in some, well, a little bit less than 30 years, some 75% of the global population will live inside cities and suburbs. So this megatrend of urbanization combined with the megatrend of climate change, you know, we shouldn't allow that to clash. We have an obligation as humans, I think, in order for us to come up with solid, bold, and courageous design solutions as how to create a sustainable future within the city for people, but at the same time combat the climate change. And of course these are headlines, and it's much easier said than done. But I think from a micro perspective in BlocksHub, what we try to do is to reach out to people in order to encourage them to come up with these, to pose these new questions as to how we can actually solve these problems. And what we do is we try to engage them in these dialogues, framing new futures, framing new narratives on how to create solid answers to these challenges. And you know, as a result of that process, the solutions that are brought up in the engagement with our members, we bring back to the community. So it's sort of a closed loop
of open source thinking, talking about framing new ideas, bringing new ideas to life, and then bringing those ideas back to the ecosystem. We call that encouraging, engaging, and enlarging knowledge, with the overall purpose of creating a better and more sustainable future.
That's beautiful. Now I want to hear an example of that, because it's so interesting to see how to scale that.
Well, thank you so much for being inspired by that, of course, because we're thrilled by that, and we love to go to work every day in order to push that agenda. And even more, we love to go to work to reach out to these more than 350 companies. I think if you stack them on top of each other, we represent something like 45,000 people altogether.
Wow.
Of course, not engaged in everyday collaboration within BlocksUp. Of course not. But you know, we can reach out to quite a movement and quite a community of people being passionate about, you know, changing, as I said.
And as you bring them together, I can only imagine the intellectual capital of that, of having so many brilliant minds who are willing to work together to, come up with new innovative solutions to some of the most urgent problems that we're facing.
You're right. And I think what's the beauty of it is that sort of the majority of the people I'm talking about here are actually onboarding with an open mindset. I think that's sort of the basic prerequisite for changing. You have to come up with an open mindset. You have to be thoroughly interested in sharing. So there are no NDAs here. There are no intellectual properties here. And what we talk about, people actually share. Mm. And if people are scared of sharing, I normally just say to them, well, you decide yourself what you want to share. It's up to you. It's not up to me. But basically, people are sharing, hence people are giving. And, you know, if you have that sharing and open and giving mindsets, I think you 10, 20, 30 fold are actually handed things and new ideas and inspiration back that you can take on and onboard in your own everyday life within your individual company. So that's sort of the basic mindset of, we all have roughly the same mission being, you know, creating a more sustainable urban future. We all have basically the same sort of passion for sharing, and the third ingredient is sort of this the facilitation of bringing these people together, and that is actually what we do. So the fact that we are convening, bringing people together around shared ideas and shared agendas, that is what we do in reality. And then, of course, the question is, what do we do and what do we talk about? And, of course, there is a variety of things that we can talk about, because we have, in order to guide us, in order to steer our thinking of how to transform cities, we are talking about cities as systems and cities as nature and cities as communities. And those are very broad concepts of transformation, of course, but they are actually sort of our guiding lights in order to say, okay, what kind of discussions are we having within the community of BlocksUp? So these three, you know, views upon how to transform cities are very, very much sort of guiding us in our discussions and in our topics that we discuss with the people of the community. And just to give you some examples, of course, looking back at the pandemic, there is really an urge for individuals and companies to talk about what is the future of work. Are we going back to the offices to work in the sort of the same way we saw pre-pandemic? And the answer is, of course, we are not. But what kind of possible futures are we then talking about? That is sort of a topic which is on the top of quite a lot of people's minds. And if you add to that, you know, the challenges that many big cities have in the world. For example, if you go to the US, you look at what's happening in downtown San Francisco and downtown New York, etc. Going to London, see what's happening there. People are not commuting as they did before the pandemic. So what on earth is going on, and how can we transform the city centers? How can we bring life back to a city where there are no people? question mark. And that's sort of just to give you an example of what we are trying to solve and what we are trying to discuss.
Mm-hmm. So let's go deeper.
Yeah.
So first of all, for example, this example that is so relevant to so many cities, how would you, as a facilitator of connection and innovation, what are the questions that you ask yourself at the beginning of the process of trying to solve this issue?
Well, I think, you know, I'm not the guy coming up with the answers. I'm the one posing the questions, of course. But of course, I think what I'm talking about here requires sort of an intersectional view on how to come up with solutions. So you bring lots of not like-minded people in the room in order for them to come up with solutions. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the architects talking to the engineer. I'm talking about very sort of multidisciplinary setups of people. And I think that's sort of a basic ingredient in what we do in order for us to actually discuss, but also come up with new solutions to the challenges I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So in this case, about what does the future bring in, you know, in downtown office spaces when you have, you know, a situation of maybe a majority of the people actually working there before the pandemic now not commuting to work every morning, because these vast distances that we're talking about, if we talk about San Francisco or New York or the bigger cities in the world, London for that matter, just to have a European perspective. You know, you don't commute 4 or 5 hours a day in order to get to your job and then return in the evening. And looking at what's happening in Tokyo and Japan, people are not returning anyway. They are just stuck in the city center after spending 3 hours commuting. So what do you do? And I think the obvious answer is that you, of course, look at the city centers in a much more multifunctional way rather than just, you know, looking at buildings in downtown areas as office buildings. So, of course, you have to integrate, you have to widen up the purpose and the functionality of these buildings and the spaces there in order to reach out to sort of a diversity of activities going on in the buildings. So the headquarters of IBM in downtown Manhattan is no longer only for IBM and their guests. No, it's much more sort of a multifunctional, multi-diverse theater of experiences. To name it in that direction, fundamentally differently thought about as an office building than before. And as I said, the straightforward answers, you know, on a case-to-case point of view, I don't really have here, but you know, these are sort of basic ingredients. Widen up the scope, looking at diverse functionalities in order to look at buildings in completely different ways, which of course requires much more than just, you know, the C-suite of IBM, looking at what's the purpose of their building, just to name them as an example. So that's sort of an example which I think is interesting, and I feel that lots of different cities are looking upon this problem as a major challenge to the vitality and the diversity and livability of city centers for the future. So it's an immense problem that we have to solve in a very sort of, as I said, very cross-disciplinary way of solving.
And you know, it brings us back to the core question of humanity. Why do we leave our house? Mm-hmm. Or what is it that we crave in our day-to-day life? Why talk to another human being or engage in that risky activity of getting to know a new person, that it's so dangerous?
You're right.
From an evolutionary standpoint.
You're right. But I think also talking from an evolutionary standpoint, I think I live to look upon, you know, the social species or the human species as a social species. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are. To the best of my knowledge, we are social animals, and we need to be together, but not necessarily in the old formats. We have to develop new ways of being together, to live together, to work together, to commute together, not necessarily from a Monday to Friday model, as we've seen. I think that model is outdated, and it will never come back. But what kind of new models will enter the stage? And I think basically if sort of the basic mental model here is that we are social species, we know for sure that we need to meet, hence the fact that cities are for people. Without the vibe, without the vitality of actually people meeting up, working together, talking to each other, kissing, making love, reading in newspapers on the benches, etc. Or on your iPad, sorry, on the benches. What's there to talk about a city then? So the notion of a city vanishes if you don't acknowledge that that is what, you know, the cities are for.
Yeah. And maybe that's also what Blocks Hub is for.
That is hopefully what we are for.
People come together, exchanging ideas, creating collaborations. It's like the new, you know, how cities evolved around the meeting point of trade routes.
You're right.
Maybe this is the new meeting point of idea routes.
You're right. The idea route is fantastic. Solution rounds, or, you know, just, you know... water holes, and I think, you know, if you look at offices and companies as water holes or idea or nodes on the idea routes, I think that gives you a much more vital and expressive way of looking at what is my job, what is the future of work, and how can I add to my, you know, mental health basically. And my ability to work and my ability to create, how does this add to that ability? What does not add to my ability to innovate is, you know, going on the bus every morning and then returning to my home the same night five times a week for the whole life and whole career. I think, of course, that sums up to years, and then it's I just get, you know, as we speak, bored and tired of thinking about that model. but looking back, of course, that was the model, and I think that model it hasn't changed yet fundamentally. But I think we live in times of transition where, you know, our kids and hopefully also ourselves are going to experience that new way of working, where the point is that, you know, you cannot expand, you cannot grow as a company, as an entity, you cannot grow in the thinking as a human being, as an individual, without reaching out to your social arena, to the networks of not like-minded people, thinking together, co-creating new ideas, etc., etc. So I normally talk to companies about what's your network strategy. How do you reach out to, you know, the world outside in order to innovate, in order to grow, and in order to think in new ways? But taking that on board, what's your personal network strategy? How would you reach out to the people outside yourself in order to be inspired, in order to get more vitality, in order to learn about and create new ideas, etc., etc.? So that's sort of very sort of conscious thinking about what's my network strategy, so to speak.
I love that. I think people strategy. How much of a network strategy should a person or a company or a business entity have? Let's say maybe in percentage.
Hopefully, lots.
Like the merrier, more the merrier kind of situation.
The more the merrier, yeah. Well, that's actually a great question, because, you know, it's to me, it's not an equation. I haven't really put figures on it like that, but that would be interesting. I think, basically, you know, when you need to think about something that has the potential to change what you are doing, what your company is doing, what your colleague is doing, what your team is doing, etc. That you know, from the start of that reflection, you need to think outside your own little sort of territory, meaning your own laptop or your own team or your own company. So I love to quote Yochai Benkler from Howard, saying that, you know, the world is too fast and too networked and too expanding in order for any company or any organization or any individual to have all the answers inside. And I think if you if you wake up every morning with the, you know, realizing that, you know, I do not have all the answers inside, even though I'm a fantastic engineer, you know, doing the most fantastic construction or calculations when you're building bridges or tunnels or whatever we're talking about, you know, you don't have all the capacities in order for you and your things to thrive. So how do I reach out? How do I open up? How do I get to the people that can add to my equation? How can I give something to them in order for them to give back to me? I think if you have that basic notion, then I think, you know, you are actually way down the road of creating your own personal network strategy or the strategy of a company. But it requires that you sort of, from the word go, thinks about, okay, what's outside my system? And maybe that sort of underlines the conclusion in what we're talking about here. So how can I step outside my own system? This is sort of a fundamental systemic question. If you talk to systemic theorists, you know, the fact that how can I, you know, step outside my system and look upon what I'm doing from the outside in? I think that is fundamental. That is a fundamental tool for anyone to, you know, become richer in the sense of actually creating better ideas, being more vital, being more happy, being more lovable, etc., etc.
So we're running out of time, and I really wish we could go longer, but this is what we have today. So before we go, I have one last question that I ask all of my guests. So I want to, first of all, thank you for making the time, for meeting me today, and for being a guest on our podcast. And
thank you for having me.
Sharing this beautiful insights that you have. Anyone who wants to connect with you, where is the best place to do that?
Well, that will be my email, of course. Uh-huh. At any point in time, reach out to me, to us, in order for us to help you in any possible way we can. My email is tkl@blockshop.org, tkl@blockshop.org. And I'll respond to you as fast as I can, and then we'll meet, hopefully.
Wonderful. And obviously, I will also put it in the show notes.
Great.
And now for the last question.
The last question.
It's called the wild napkin.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to a bar and you have a couple of drinks and your mind is really free. And all of a sudden, you have the craziest idea. And all you have is a napkin. So you write it down. What does it say?
Ooh, that's another great question.
So there is no budget or time limits?
Yeah. Well, given the fact that I have had 3.5 seconds to reflect on this question.
Which is the point.
Which is the point, and I applaud your idea. I think my quote would be, what can I do for you? Because if you keep an open mind, if you reach out, I'm going a little bit back to my previous answer to your question of what is my favorite sort of recipe of success and what's my advice to the next inliners. If you keep an open mind, if you do not start out by saying what's in it for me, but start out by saying what can I add to the equation in a collaboration between you and me, what can I add to the equation here, what can I give, then you get, you know, resources, competencies, financing, et cetera, back tenfold, 20-fold, 100-fold. So if you keep in mind that innovation starts by giving rather than taking, then I think, you know, you've taken the right first step.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you all for joining us. And until the next time, go out and talk to strangers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.